Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris on today's Tour Catch-Up, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com.
Alcaraz stays on course for a sunshine double.
Rybakina could be set for another Sabalenka showdown.
And Del Potro eyes a comeback at the US Open.
Kim, Chris, today is the 29th of March and we are here to catch up on the week in tennis at Tennis Weekly HQ. We are in the Miami Open. We are in the second half of the Sunshine Double. And I've got to say, guys, it's been a messy and a mad Miami Open for me so far. We are at the quarterfinal stages, but there's been shocks, there's been rain. And I mean, still, I feel miraculously, we still could get the Indian Wells finals on both the men and women's sides in Miami, because we still have Alcaraz and Medvedev in the draw, Rybakina and Sabalenka in the draw. So it's still all to play for. So it's all very exciting. But I obviously got to say the most exciting thing from your perspective, surely, is having me back on the show.
Joel, we are thrilled to have you back. Welcome back. I assume you've fully recovered, or are you still
give us a health update.
How's your head?
Yes. No, yes. Look, guys, I am all fine. I was really excited about the victories for Casper Ruud and Caroline Garcia in Indian Wells. So all is fine with my head.
Yes, there's that makes
no
perfect sense.
Memory
oh,
loss.
Yeah.
No screens
those
allowed.
Seriously, it's been great. Thanks a little shout out last week. All good to go now. And yeah, I had my birthday celebrations as well. As you correctly said, I did have a few too many woo-woos down on the coast in Kent, in Margate, but all the better for it.
What was in a woo-woo? That was our big question, Joel. Do we know?
I still don't really know. I think it's Prosecco, orange and tropical juice, maybe. I've already got it wrong, I feel.
Okay.
I've already got
From
it wrong.
Fruit, the tropic.
To me, though, it just tastes like alcoholic Fanta fruit twist. That's what
lovely.
It means to me.
Goes down very nicely. Well, Joel, where are your woo-woos to blame for your terrible prediction with putting Sasha's
well,
Zverev
in? You are itching to get on that, aren't you? With the Zverev. I know in hindsight it did seem a bit silly.
Alcaraz's quarter.
Look, I know there is some suspicion there, and I think maybe the woo-woos were to blame for what seems to be a very rogue prediction. I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest, with Zverev in the semi-finals. I know our listeners probably kind of equally perplexed as well. And on hindsight, yeah. Not my best pick.
Well, one thing that's got a few of us perplexed this week is something that's come out on social media. Chris, I know we were talking about this before starting to record today. Concerns Roger Federer and a film that's coming out.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit more about this?
Indeed. I'm kind of on a similar sort of thing. There's a very odd thing appeared on our social media, which was a new docu-film, which will be coming out on YouTube called The Ride of a Lifetime. And the sort of second line of this is the Grand Train Tour of Switzerland, and this is starring Roger Federer and Trevor Noah. So this is a partnership that we didn't know that we needed, but I'm not mad at, but I'm just a bit confused how a ride on a Swiss train would be the ride of a lifetime. I think they're probably quite calm and run to time, but I did find out a few interesting things about this, that this docufilm not only will be, I'm sure, very popular for the Swiss Tourist Board, but the director is the same director as Cats, that wonderful box office flop. So I'm hoping there's some animation involved.
Awesome Andrew Lloyd Webber music.
Maybe
perhaps
They'll break into song. That would be quite something in the hills.
I'm looking at the promotional poster and I feel like that is buried away somewhere, and rightfully so. I actually went to see that film with my mum, and And I there are not many times where I feel like I want to walk out of a cinema, but watching Cats the Musical, yes, that was definitely one of those times.
I mean, it definitely wasn't that too positive an experience, that one, but I reckon that with this one, there's one bit of trivia that I want to get out that I found particularly interesting, was that they both have a South African mother and a Swiss father. Who knew?
Oh, that okay. is true. I was wondering about the South African connection, but I didn't know Trevor Noah's mother was Swiss. So that's an interesting one. But I am curious as to see if, I don't know, is Roger Federer becoming the new Michael Portillo and going around trains in
maybe we put him on a
and...
canal boat next, you know? He could join that one.
Well, hang on. We did have, do you remember, we did have the Fed Express, didn't we? In
we did.
Basel.
In Basel, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe he's sort of branching out and he's taking the Fed Express into more rural, scenic, mountainous locations with this docufilm, but we'll have to see how it goes. I'm curious.
Out tomorrow, 30 from tomorrow. You can watch it on YouTube, everybody.
Ooh, excellent. Might do that for my commute into work tomorrow.
We'll report back next week.
Yeah, full roundup of the film. But yeah, I mean, talking of celebrities and tennis, one of my sort of fun bits of this week was finding out that Cam Norrie has played tennis with Jon Bon Jovi, which I thought was quite an unlikely partnership as well.
That is unlikely.
Not to mention Federer and Trevor Noah. But yeah, apparently Norrie... It was invited to go to Bon Jovi's home in Palm Beach to have a bit of a hit. And then Bon Jovi went off to the tennis to watch him practice. And I thought, that sounds quite random. But I think it's because Norrie's girlfriend has connections to the family.
I was
going to
ask,
family.
Do you think he was the top choice? Do you think he started at the number one seed and got to number 9?
Yeah, he was like, oh, this guy will do. Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, yeah, maybe Cam Norrie is going to, you know, find himself at a Bon Jovi rock concert or in the higher echelons of some kind of, rock hall of fame at some point. But
it didn't help him on the court this week, Kim, did it? Needs a better hitting partner than Jon Bon Jovi.
Yeah. It reminds me also of Karolina Muchova. Isn't she mates of Rebel Wilson, which is quite random.
So I just don't know how they meet each other.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they met, but there is definitely something. They're definitely friends because she was spotted at Wimbledon watching her. But that was kind of my fun bit for the week. Joel, have you got a celebrity linkage for us? Or are you gonna? You got another highlight on your first week back for a while?
Yeah, not so much a celebrity highlight, but a highlight for the podcast. Listeners, we have been nominated for Best Tennis Podcast by the Sports Podcast Awards. We've made the shortlist, and now it is time for our listeners, hopefully, to do their bit. Because in order for us to win Best Tennis Podcast at the Sports Podcast Awards, we need your help. We need you to register and vote for Tennis Weekly for Best Tennis Podcast by the 6th of April. It would really mean a lot to the team, to myself, to Kim and Chris. We put so much effort into the show. So if you really, really enjoy us and you want to kind of show your support, this would really mean a lot to us. We're going to put the link in the description. So all you got to do is just click that link, take you through to a page, and then click vote for Tennis Weekly on the Best Tennis Podcast page. But yeah, really, really, really exciting news. We made the shortlist last year, so we're hoping to do one better this year. So if you could vote for us, that would be really, 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 really well appreciated.
Yeah, we'd be very grateful.
And did you have to do your best loser's face last year? Did you have to clap along? And
well, do you know what? It was virtual. It was virtual last year. And it was just quite funny because I remember they got like a former rugby player to host the awards. And just hearing a celebrity in his own right, James Haskell, which is a former England player, just say the name of the podcast just made me smile a little bit. So I feel like that was enough for us last year, but yeah, genuinely this year we would love to go one step further. So listeners, if you want to help the show out and you want to make us Best Tennis Podcast, then please register and vote with the link that I'm going to share in the description.
Well, let's take a look at the tennis and we'll start on the women's side because, Joel, I'm afraid your intro is already proving out of date because Sabalenka's actually just lost. Live update. Yeah, she's lost in straight sets to Sorana Kostea in the quarterfinals. So we definitely won't be seeing a repeat of the Indian Wells final with her and Rybakina. I mean, great week for Kostea. She's beaten Muchova already, Caroline Garcia already, still yet to drop a set this tournament. So a big scalp for Kostea to come through against Sabalenka. Sabalenka had, of course, been looking pretty good, hadn't dropped a set so far, had beaten Krejcikova quite comfortably. So, Chris, are you surprised by this result, seeing Kostea take out Sabalenka in straights?
I definitely didn't think that was going to happen when I saw that. I thought that, I thought the Sabalenka would come through. She had such a great result against Krejcikova, a player who she's had some really difficult encounters with so far this season, coming through that one, 3-2, kind of making short work of the Czech in that one. But Kostea, you know, she does love a fast ball. She really likes to handle the pace. And, you know, the players that she's beaten just shows you that she can really, really play well. And when she's on, she's on. She's always been a bit like that. I just think that she kind of came out of nowhere, this Sunshine Double, because she was down at sort of 80, I think 83 in the rankings before Indian Wells. And now I think in the live rankings, she's all the way up to 41. And that's not a bad couple of weeks' work. So that is a surprise. And you have to say, if she's in the semi-finals, who's to say she can't keep going?
Yeah, she feels to me like a player who is unseeded but is dangerously like unseeded in a draw, and can was sort of aware that she can, I think, have these upsets around seeded players. I am still a little bit surprised because, you know, Miami is a fast court, and I thought that would have played very much into kind of Sabalenka's power game. But having said that, Kostea also, I feel like, has some very big weapons on her. I actually think her game is not too dissimilar to like a little bit like Caroline Garcia in terms of, you know, big serve, good ground strokes, particularly on her forehand side. And yeah, she just seems to be putting it together this week. I think what's so amazing about it is, you know, the longevity of her career and how, you know, I think she burst onto the scene, you know, in the late 2000s, you know, 2008, 2009. Players around her like Wozniacki, I think Kvitova as well, and she really, I think, did burst onto the scene but did get stuck in the doldrums, I think, with her ranking, and you know, wasn't able to progress. So it's great to see her kind of, I feel like, rediscover the form that she burst onto the scene with.
2009, that was that quarterfinal, I remember,
yeah,
that she had at the French Open. And then
I almost forget
then,
she got to a Grand Slam quarterfinal. Because she's been, I feel like, an unseeded player for so long. When you see her name, I think, pop up in the draws.
And it feels like she causes a couple of upsets in the early rounds, but clearly doesn't follow it through into the later rounds. But yeah, 2009 was when she really
burst into the scene. Maybe this will be her crowning moment. You know, sometimes players have been around for a long time and they do suddenly all manage to finally put it together in a tournament. And you never know. She's only got two more wins till she gets there. But Chris, you mentioned that Sabalenka had beaten Krejcikova in the round before. And this brings us on to you some comments that Krejcikova made about the fact that she feels forgotten and somewhat overlooked on the tour. And she feels that a lot of the conversation surrounds the likes of Iga Świątek, Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina at the moment, as being the sort of the leading players of the tour. And she feels like she's sort of being snubbed, despite the fact that she, you know, she won the Dubai tournament and she has had some big wins herself, you know, and has a, I think, you know, some good wins over Świątek. What's your opinion as an ardent fan of the WTA Tour? What do you make of Krejcikova's comments? Because I think you're quite a fan of Krejcikova as well, aren't you? So do you think she's got a point here?
Well, I think we are a little bit guilty of this as well. I think we were sort of talking about it as maybe it was a big three. And I think we should definitely have her in that conversation. I think it is unfortunate that obviously she did then lose quite handily to Sabalenka immediately after making those comments. But I mean, if you look at the results over the last few years, she's been very consistent at the top of the game. And I think when you look at kind of the tournament win side of things, it's only actually Iga and Sabalenka who've won more titles than her. They've won 12 and 7, and since 2020, Krejcikova has won 6. So she's been very much up there in the top three. She's been ranked as high as number 2, and this season she's actually won the bigger title than Iga has. So I think if we're talking sort of big three, we should be talking big four in that sense. But then I do think you get into the question of where do we see it in terms of, you know, a Jessie Pegula versus a Krejcikova in that conversation. But adding in, I'd say, the double side of things, I think we should all be talking about Krejcikova more, is what I would say personally.
Is that not part of her beauty in a way, though, that she is
under
sort
the
of
radar?
Yeah, and I feel hiding like she's kind sight. Of a stealth player, yeah. And therefore, if I was her, I'd kind of prefer that because I would have less pressure and expectation on me.
Yeah, I personally don't still see her as part of the big three. I still firmly, for me personally, I still firmly see that as like Sabalenka, Rybakina and Świątek. And I think it was unfortunate that, you know, she didn't ultimately, I feel, back up her comments, you know, in this match against Sabalenka. It was so routine. It was a bit kind of almost strange to kind of look back on those comments and think, hey, you want to talk about the fact that, you know, this is providing you with extra motivation, you know, wanting to be part of the conversation. Well, I feel like you've got to back them up on the tennis court, and she failed to do that. And, you know, I know you speak about the doubles side of it. And yes, I feel like we've got to appreciate how much Krejcikova has achieved in terms of success on the doubles court. But I do wonder, again, come back to, you know, this age old debate on does she fully focus on singles and forget doubles? I feel like, don't know if I can have a big three player in there who maybe isn't as kind of 100% committed into the singles as players like Sabalenka, Rybakina and Świątek are.
You're discounting Pegula then as well, as she's a big doubles player.
I would discount Pegula more on her Grand Slam prowess, yep, at the moment. I mean, very, very consistent player, arguably the most consistent player, I think, on the tour at the moment. But you look at her Grand Slam record against the others, I don't think she's gone past a quarterfinal yet. She's been to the quarterfinal quite a few times, so there still seems to be that stumbling block for her.
I think the same could be said, though, for Krejcikova since that Grand Slam win in 2021. She also hasn't been past a quarterfinal, whereas all the other players that we're talking about have either won a slam, won multiple slams, or reached multiple semifinals. So I think it's about still being in those tournaments in the latter stages when picking up a 1,000 is obviously a great achievement, but you need to be in the business end regularly of the slam. So I probably would agree with you, but I still think we should talk about her a little bit more.
Do you think the WTA are looking at this and thinking this is a marketing opportunity that has come from the players? Because I feel like the first time around it happened with, you know, the ATP, it was a thing that they made and then it cottoned on. Do you expect to see kind of this big three talk manifest itself into something that we're going to see properly on, in terms of content, I think, on the channels, in terms of drumming up, you know, excitement in the tour throughout the year? Or do you think it's just going to stay as a kind of a flash in the pan talking point, you know, at the start of the season?
Well, do you think, Kim, can it be a big three?
Well, I think big three is way like getting ahead of themselves. Yeah. I can understand from a marketing perspective, but if you compare it to the big three, like they're nowhere near. And I think it's just premature to even try and lump them all together. So if I was Krejcikova, I'd kind of be like, well, there isn't really a big three anyway on the women's side at the moment. There might be. I'm not saying that none of these players are going to become, you know, great. Like, I'm not saying they're not going to become great, but I feel like it's a bit premature to be lumping them together. Like, they are the current top, you know, three players, arguably. However, do we need to have a categorization like this? Is it serving a particular purpose? But maybe that is a marketing ploy.
I agree with you,
talking of Świątek, do you agree with me? Oh, thank you.
Yes,
that means a lot. Talking of Świątek, people may be wondering where she is in terms of the Miami tournament. She had to withdraw with a rib injury. Unfortunately, she's also going to miss the Billie Jean King Cup next month. So we don't actually have a return date yet for her. But yeah, she's been feeling quite a bit of discomfort and pain and could not compete in the tournament, which is a shame. And we wish her all the best coming back onto the tour. Another player as well, talking of injury, Bianca Andreescu, definitely no stranger to injury and was doing so well in this tournament. Yeah. Had some great wins over Raducanu, Sakkari, Kenin, but had a really unfortunate incident in her last match against Alexandrova to her ankle. She sort of turned her ankle and had to retire kind of immediately. Chris, I know you're a big Bianca Andreescu fan. She, again, doesn't really know the results from all the, I guess, all the scans she's had, but she's probably going to be out for a while, we might think. And what a, you know, horrible setback again for her with her with her career.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's devastating. I think there's been an awful lot of people who are very sad to see this happen, because she's one of those players who we've talked about so much, who has so much potential. She's such a great all-court game and she brings so much to the tennis court. And when you see her kind of putting it together, it is a reminder that, you know, she is a player of real pedigree. That year in 2019, she won in Canada. She won the 1000. She also won Indian Wells, and she won a slam. So it just shows when she's fit what she can do. And I think she felt for kind of the first time in a while that she really was able to track that top 10 and to try and get back up there, because that was her goal when we spoke to her at the Billie Jean King Cup. So it's a player that just has had so much bad luck. And I think it kind of speaks to the fact there are a lot of parallels with Raducanu in terms of teenagers who won the US Open, who unfortunately have just been so unlucky when it comes to injuries. And the only positive that we can say from this is that although she did describe it as the worst pain she's ever felt, she still doesn't know how serious it is. And so it could be something that felt very painful in that moment, but it didn't look like she necessarily fully rolled it. So she's waiting on the results of the scans. But I think the whole of kind of the tennis community is just very much gutted for her in this sense. It's like similar to what we'll be talking about a bit later on with Del Potro, just a player who can't catch a break, who's won the US Open.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of the, you know, the Zverev injury that we saw at Roland Garros, who sort of suddenly went over and seemed very, very painful.
He was in such good form,
hopefully.
Though.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it always happens when they're playing super well, doesn't it? Which is Sod's law.
I feel like that's the worry as well, because, you know, we see, I keep thinking about like Dominic Thiem, and, you know, these players get an injury and then they come back. And obviously the scary thing is like, will they ever get back to where they were? And, you know, I think unfortunately Dominic Thiem's probably the most clear and obvious example of that at the moment. And, you know, I see this happen to Bianca Andreescu and I think, I don't want to think about it, but I hope it's going to be more like an Alexander Zverev kind of getting back to where it is, as opposed to, you know, Dominic Thiem. But you just, I guess you just don't know whether, you know, how players come back and whether they're going to be the same. And
takes longer, Joel, doesn't it? It's taking longer, I feel, than, you know, when players like Nadal, for example. I mean, obviously he's a superhuman, but when players like him sort of came back and then they pick up these results, I think for a lot of people, it takes a very long time. You know, it can take a couple of seasons to get back to the same sort of level and form that you were at. And you can't really take any of that for granted.
I genuinely think, just because how competitive both tours are, being unseeded in these events, I know obviously Bianca's, you know, her ranking hasn't necessarily warranted a seed for a while, but just being unseeded in these draws, it, and you know, you're out and you could get like the top seed in the first round, it just makes it so much harder. And I think that has kind of come on since maybe like a decade ago, where, you know, maybe the draw and the quality and the depth wasn't as great, but now it's just so tough and so competitive straight off the bat with a, you know, a protected ranking, for example, that I do think it does take longer to get back to a more protected position when you are seeded, when you might get buys, that it makes it a little bit easier. So yeah, I do think there's a, you know, there's always that nervousness and I think that tension when it looks like someone might be out for a long-term injury.
Yeah. Well, as a result of Andreescu retiring, Alexandrova made her way through. She'll face Kvitova in that quarterfinal, and then the winner of that will play Sorana Kostea. In the top half of the women's draw, we still have Elena Rybakina, Indian Wells champion, going through. She's had some comfortable matches, but also some tougher three-set matches. But her last match, yeah, against Trevisan, very, very comfortable. Martina Trevisan, of course, famous for reaching the Roland Garros
semi-finals last year.
I swear she is the most hated player on the women's tour, or like there is
That's a bit harsh, Joel. There is no love. What's she ever
done to you? There is no love towards Martina Trevisan, I swear.
You need to speak to some Italians,
Twitter communities, doing so well and getting to quarterfinals and semifinals at a Grand Slam. I feel like she's always talked about, is she the worst Grand Slam semifinalist of all time?
That's you, Joel, that's talking about that. You are the source of this hate, I think. You're just fuel onto the fire. I think it's I'm more surprised. I think none of us can make sense of it. On a fast hard court, taking out Ostapenko 6-3, 6-3, I think that really caused waves. Did anyone see that coming?
I think it just sent everyone into meltdown, to be honest. I think we were all expecting.
Maybe there's a lot of Ostapenko fans out there who just couldn't make sense as to how this could possibly have happened. But then order was restored. So I think anyone, as you say, Joel, who wasn't thrilled with her doing well at this tournament, that bagel set from Rybakina would have put her sort of firmly back in her place in that sense. One fun fact I wanted to point out from Rybakina so far, that she has emulated a feat by the great Serena Williams in the fact that she has served 10 aces in four consecutive matches. And that's the first time since the US Open in 2020 that a player has done that in the same tournament.
I mean, you feel like this court surface is made for the slightly quicker...
It's made for the aces.
But I do, I was reading, you know, she has obviously come back off winning Indian Wells, and I think there's been a little bit of, she's a little bit fatigued, you know, she's not playing, I feel, the levels of tennis we, or not yet anyway, I feel we saw in Indian Wells. I mean, you know, she had to save match points against against Badosa, you know, she was taken to three sets by Kalinskaya, but I think it's great to see her, like, sort of these really gritty victories, I think, where yes, she is serving aces, but I don't think her first serve percentage has been not necessarily where she wants it to be. Yeah. So I think there's potential there, but you know, she's got Jessica Pegula next. I think she's probably going to have to raise those levels in order to, again, have a potential course to being a Sunshine Double champion.
Yeah, because JPEG, Jessie Pegula, she struggled through against Potapova in the last round, saving two match points.
Yeah, she did really well to win that. I think 1:30 in the morning as well. I think it was a very late finish.
It was very late. And it prompts the question, Joel. She put out a point of view tweet of her at 2 a.m. having just won 7-6 in the third set, saying her arm was cramping trying to brush through her hair. Now, the last time she did one of these tweets with a bag of Doritos at midnight, you very kindly replicated that. So does this mean we're going to see a photo of you in the mirror doing your hair? Your hair is looking very messy.
It could be in need of a brush,
Joel. It has been. I do think it does need a haircut. But I am really enjoying Jessica Pegula on... I feel like she's smashing social media at the moment with these sort of candid... life on tour photos that it's not all cracked up to be, and I feel like this is the next one in the series of that. It was a great win, but yeah, the rain I think was a nightmare. I mean, the rain has just not been great, I feel, through Miami this week, especially with no roof. It's been a bit of a situation I think that they might need to look at in the future.
They've had a lot of power cuts as well. I think one of the reasons they moved sites was because of power failure over at the last venue, and they've had a few times on the live stream for those of people who've been watching where it's fully been cut out, which is quite quite an unusual thing at this day and age. So I think there has to be some questions about, is this the perfect, is this not tennis paradise, is what I'd say, that's for sure.
No. Oh, not in a baseball stadium, in a retrofitted baseball stadium. It doesn't look... I get that it probably cuts money and it makes the most of existing infrastructure, but it doesn't... It's just ugly, isn't it? It's ugly. Mm. Yeah.
And let's look at the men's results from Miami so far. We're at the quarterfinal stage. Carlos Alcaraz doing very nicely so far through the tournament, hasn't dropped a set. He'll be playing Taylor Fritz though, so I'm sure he'll have a slightly tougher test to come. Not really going to talk about Alcaraz's tennis too much because he's been in pretty good shape. I love the fact that he paid homage to Fernando Alonso on the camera after his last victory.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's been inspired by Alonso, who sent him a message, I think, okay. on Instagram. And obviously, Alonso's got off to a cracking start in the Formula One. So I liked that, the two you know, top Spanish sportsmen showing a bit of love to each other. So yeah, Alcaraz Fritz, that'd be an interesting one because they've both been in good form. And in that other section, though, of the draw, we've got Jannik Sinner also in good form. Could be on for an Alcaraz-Sinner repeat in the semi-final, perhaps. But I guess it's a rogue element to the quarterfinal lineup here is Emil Ruusuvuori. He has come through the bit of the draw that Casper Ruud and Sasha Zverev were kind of occupying. Casper Ruud doesn't really have much mojo at the moment, does he? His struggles continue. He lost to Bottic van der Zandschulp. And yeah, Zverev, Joel, your prediction. Yeah, he lost to Taro Daniel, better. Love and four.
I know, that was
any
bad.
Comments on that?
Joel,
I repeat,
by Taro Daniel.
You had him to take out Carlos Alcaraz. I repeat.
Yeah, it's not gone well. But yeah, Ruusuvuori, very, very good. Very good showing from him so far. I suspect maybe Jannik Sinner will get the better of him. I was very impressed with Sinner's performance against Rublev. I think him and Darren Cahill I actually think they're a match made in heaven. I think they're working really, really well together. And Sinner put on a near complete performance, I think, against Rublev. We know he likes playing in Miami. I think he's reached the quarterfinals here every time he's played it. He's been in the final here against Hubert Hurkacz. So, I'm interested to see how he does because, you know, he had obviously suffered a little blip, I feel, last season, but he's kind of making these small incremental gains now that should get him back, you know, back into the top 10. And who knows, maybe even further.
In watching that match, John, it does feel a little bit like Sinner was the world number six, not the world number sort of 10 in that match. And in the sense that Rublev kind of was very much the second, looked like the lower ranked player in that match. And I feel like it would be great to have sort of Sinner right up there in the mix when it comes to some of the players, because it does feel like he's a form player. And we've got players like Tsitsipas who are injured. We've got Casper who hasn't been able to put the form together. And actually Felix hasn't really had the form that he had at the end of last season. So we've almost got like the form players, then we've got the top 10. And I think that maybe they're not quite marrying up at the moment when it comes to these big tournaments.
I agree with that. I think that's a fair supposition. I think Sinner will get the better of Ruusuvuori. Interesting fact about Ruusuvuori, he collects watches in his spare time. So I assume he'll never be late to a match because he
know
when he needs to
that,
be there.
That makes a lot of sense because on his Twitter, he's always saying exactly what time his match will be on court. So maybe that's his thing.
He must be into watches and time. Maybe he should go on the Swiss train with Federer.
Does that mean when he wins a tournament rather than just get out the one watch, you know, like Rafa does, gets out like the red, he's just gonna get out like 10 watches
an
on
armful.
His wrist. Yeah.
A Casio that, on
yeah.
there.
Oh, quite yeah. possibly.
A baby G.
Like a watch dealer. Look at all yes. my watches.
Oh, in the bottom half of the draw, we've got two kind of surprise elements as well. Well, actually, one maybe isn't a surprise. Francisco Cerundolo is into the quarterfinals.
Oh, That is a surprise.
It's not, Joel. He got to the semi-finals here last year, which I had completely forgotten. But I just was sort of having a look and I was like, oh, he must love the courts in Miami because he's gone deep 2 years in a row now, much to the surprise of everyone. I don't. He's got Karen Khachanov next, who came through against Tsitsipas in the last round, and this is significant for Karen Khachanov, isn't it? Would you like to tell us why, Joel? I know you're a big fan of this.
I mean,
ridiculous
this
stat.
this to me was an incredible stat. Karen Khachanov was 0-23. Against top 10 opponents before he faced Stefanos Tsitsipas in Miami. And he's now obviously broken that duck, but a real, not a stat you want, particularly
that
for a player
shocking.
Who's...
shocking.
Yeah, really, really shocking. That to me just screams, that's your level and you've reached your limit. Really, really honestly. But, you know, he's had obviously some good results. He's had some good results in the first kind of quarter of the year. I still take it with a pinch of salt, though, because Stefanos Tsitsipas, I still feel like he's playing injured and he's not at his best. And to me, this was a little bit not like Khachanov playing like lights out tennis to defeat Tsitsipas in straights. I feel like there's mitigating circumstances that meant, yeah, Khachanov was the favourite.
And Tsitsipas was having a bit of a whinge about having to play whilst he's injured, and the rules of the ATP requiring players to turn up for events, even, you know, and forcing them to play a certain amount per year. I'm not so sure on the rules on this, to be fair. I'm going to be completely honest. I know that there are rules around you have to play a certain amount, but I would have thought if you're genuinely injured and couldn't play, a doctor's note would kind of excuse you. But I mean, what are the actual rules around this? Do we know?
That is completely factually accurate, Kim. I can tell you that the ATP mandatory Masters 1000 rules.
Oh, here we go.
Yes, exactly.
It's getting the rules.
Hang on. Sorry. I'm going to sleep already. My eyes are fading.
I'll do this one quickly. Stick with us, listeners. It states that if a player does not participate in one of the mandatory Masters 1000 tournaments, their best result from any of the Masters 1000 tournaments from the previous year is removed from their ranking calculation. But this is where it gets the key point here, is the fact that if a player is injured, they can apply for a medical exemption. They just have to provide medical documentation to support their injury or illness and gain approval from the ATP's medical services team. So all of this points to the fact that Tsitsipas is not going to be kind of penalised for this. I think he's trying to play a bit of a martyr role in this by playing injured and making it clear that he isn't fit. You have to question, one, is he as injured as he says he is? Because if he could be doing further damage, surely his doctor would recommend that he didn't play. And two, why is he misrepresenting the rules in this way? And the final thing, for those of our listeners who are still with us, and our risk losing all of us, but there is also a rule that's quite interesting, that if you've played 600 matches on the tour or played for 12 years on the tour, or you're over 31, you do qualify for a reduction of Masters 1000 in your commitment. So there are exceptions there too. And that's also why players like Nadal and players who've been around for a long time don't get deductions for not playing them. So whichever way you look at it, it's not necessarily easier for people who are like more senior or more experienced, because you are able to get a doctor's note. So no one should be playing injured.
Yeah, so it seemed a bit woe is me, really, with his comments.
That would be the short answer, Kim.
That.
Yes.
Thank you for your explanation, though, for clearing that up.
It was a bit odd, I think. You know, he's got obviously Monte Carlo coming up, where he's defending champion, and you'd want to be as fit and firing as possible for that. So if he was injured, then, you know, I feel like you would have wanted to just be like, right, I just want to get ready for the clay season when I've got big points to defend, as opposed to just kind of trying to struggle through on the, you know, in the hard courts in America.
Yeah, because he would lose the Masters result from being defending champion in Monte Carlo.
Regardless.
So I guess he wants to play in Monte Carlo. So maybe that's the thing that he can't avoid, is that if you skip these ones, then you'll get penalised in Monte Carlo. So maybe that is the crux of it.
Ooh.
Oh, it's confusing. But we don't have Tsitsipas in the tournament anymore. Karen Khachanov will be playing Francisco Cerundolo. And on the other quarterfinal on that side, we've got Daniil Medvedev making his way through. And Chris Eubanks, American qualifier, who's now in the top 100 for the first time. What do we know about Chris Eubanks? I've heard the name, I've seen it in draws, but I'm not too familiar with him. Joel, you're nodding your head as I'm saying this.
I just can't help but get caught up in his story. You know, he's been a player who's, you know, been around on the Challenger circuit. He was around on the college circuit, and you know, the impression I get from his interviews and his kind of his story is that he's never been the best in his category. He's always been sort of middle of the road, and he's just applied himself very, very well. And you know, it's really kind of come to the fore, I feel, in Miami. He came through the qualifying draw. I think his dad said to him, look, just get this, it'll be a great achievement if you just hit one, you know, round one match. But yeah, he's now into the quarterfinals against Medvedev. He's a very tall player. I think he's like 6'7", big serve on him, which obviously I think helps on these types of courts, playing in front of your home fans as well. And I really, really enjoyed in the match against Mannarino. Again, it was disrupted by rain break, and he had a little pep talk from his mate Francis Tiafoe in the changing rooms. And when I heard that, I was just like, there's probably no better player to give a pep talk, I feel, a fellow countryman pep talk, than a Francis Tiafoe giving you some advice and some encouragement. So yeah, he seems to have, I think, like the support of, you know, all the players kind of around him. And yeah, it's just great to see him, I think, you know, get to the quarterfinals and realize his potential and get into the top 100, because he came so close to it, I think, a while ago. I think he
102,
repeated,
like, I think.
102. Yeah. That must be so frustrating. Exactly. So to see him do this and come through is, yeah, it's fantastic.
Is he taking out Medvedev, Joel? Make another prediction.
No. I can't see it. Yeah. I mean, Medvedev has had a very, very, very easy draw. I mean, as I say, I feel like Miami has been a lot of shocks. Players just not continually doing well, particularly in this section. Berrettini's had a rough start to the year with injury, not great results. You know, de Minaur was expecting a little bit more from. Cam Norrie as well, going out to Barrère of France.
John Bon Jovi.
So, yeah, Eubanks. He wanted to get back to John Bon Jovi's house, right? Yeah, Eubanks obviously made the most of that, but so has Medvedev. And you've got to feel with Medvedev, he's had a walkover and two very, very run-of-the-mill matches. He will be heavy favourite.
And on that note, we're going to be taking a quick break now, but do join us in the second half, where we'll be discussing Del Potro earmarking a comeback at the US Open, the group stages for the Davis Cup Finals being announced, and we're looking ahead to the rest of the Miami Open and revising some of our predictions from last week, perhaps. So do not go anywhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Tennis Weekly, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to, I think, a par for the courts this week. We've had a couple of mysterious players in your absence, Joel, but I think you've returned and you've got something quite tricky up your sleeve for me and Chris. Is that right?
Yes, the return of me and the return of par for the courts.
And
yes.
Competition.
For you and our listeners. Yeah, like Kim, again, as always.
You always win, Chris.
As always, I'm trying to fix it so you actually beat Chris, because I feel like it's just getting boring now. We need to liven it up. So yeah, it is a path for the courts, and the subject in mind for you and our listeners is players who have achieved the Sunshine Double. And by that, I mean have won Indian Wells and Miami in a row. So consecutively, none of this
same
like
year.
In their career, but in a row, yes. And to help you and our listeners, because I know it's quite tricky, there are 11 players in total across the ATP and WTA tours. And I'm going to give you the year and the gender that it was achieved. So if you want to jot this down, listeners want to jot this down as well. So, right, I'm going to start with the men. So, male, 1991. Male, 1992. Male, 1994. 1998. 2001. And then a player did it on three occasions in 05, 06, and 17. And then one more male player did it in 11, 14, 2015, and 2016.
This is like bingo.
I know. I feel like I'm a bingo announcer. And then for the women, we've got one female player did it in 94 and 96. We had a female player do it in 2005. We had a female player do it in 2016, and we had a player do it in 2022. So there's seven
right.
male players, okay. four women players. I feel that there should be some obvious answers there, but there are also, I feel like, some tricky answers.
We are going to get all 11 this time. It's a team effort.
Oh, I don't know about that. Should we kick off without further ado?
I feel
ado?
Like Chris is so arrogant and full of it that he can go first. So you're going to give me the player and which year you think it matches up to.
I will go for Victoria Azarenka, 2016.
Correct. Yes.
Oh, wow.
That is a correct answer.
Then she had a baby.
That's not even the easiest one.
No, that's what I was thinking. I'm going to go for Novak Djokovic, who I think did the 11, 14, 15 and 16 in the men's.
Correct. Yes, that is right. Novak Djokovic done it four times out in front.
I will go for Kim Clijsters, 2005.
Correct answer. Yes, Kim Clijsters back in 2005.
Oh, I was going to say something completely different for that one. So that's good. Iga Świątek, 2022.
Correct. Yes, Iga Świątek, the most recent player to do it, but who knows, maybe Rybakina or Carlos Alcaraz could join that list very, very soon.
I will go for another 2005. I'll go for Roger Federer.
Correct, yes. So Roger Federer did it three times, 2005, 2006 and 2017.
Damn it, I was about to say him. This is the stuff
we're
I don't know
now. We're
getting
into the business end now. This is where it gets tricky.
Oh, this is just guesswork now. Andre Agassi, will I get it right if I don't get the year correct? Because I'm kind of assuming he did it in maybe like 98. Andre Agassi,
1998. Kim, it's a wrong answer.
Oh,
it's
no.
It's a wrong answer. No, that's not correct. Chris wins it with three correct answers to Kim's two. Sorry, Kim. I will say Andre Agassi is a correct answer, but you got the year wrong. Chris, any ideas?
I would have gone 2001.
Yes, Andre Agassi was in 2001. Any other answers?
Oh, so close.
I know that Steffi won in 94 and 96.
That is correct. Yes, Steffi Graf.
And then after that, the only other guess I have would be 94 for the men, Pete Sampras. And then after that, I out.
Yes, Pete Sampras was 1994. And then you could have had, so 1998, probably the most surprising name, Marcelo Rios.
Goodness. There was no way we were getting all 11, Kim.
No way.
And then 1991 and 1992, both Americans. Any ideas?
Michael Chang?
Very good, Kim. Yes, Michael Chang was in 1992 and 1991. An American player we hear a lot when we watch tennis on the television. Jim Courier did the Sunshine Double in 1991. So that's your lot. Courier, Chang, Sampras, Rios, Agassi, Federer, Djokovic, Graf, Clijsters, Azarenka and Świątek.
Well, that was tough, Joel, having to get the year as well. But I liked it. It was a good challenge. I hope the listeners, enjoyed taking part as well. I've definitely learned some new things. We do have a very thoughtful mailbag question this week as well from Saif Shaheen on email. So Saif has got in contact. Thank you very much for doing so. To ask us about hard courts. And I think this stems from kind of a lot of comments around the courts from the likes of Daniel Medvedev. He said that some pundits and former players have argued that hard courts are the purest or truest courts because they are neutral, unlike grass and clay. How can this be true when hard courts themselves vary so much and different hard courts favour different players and playing styles? Can hard be the truest surface when there is no one standard or true hard court? Now, I think that's a very thought-provoking question. And I think they've got some excellent points. Joel, kick us off. What do you think about this question that that's been posed to us about the courts?
It's a really interesting one, especially when we talk about it at the moment, going from Indian Wells to Miami, because the contrast between the two, yes, on the face of it, they are both hard courts, but Indian Wells, so slow, whereas Miami is a lot quicker. And I do like to think, in my personally growing up, having been a player, growing up, I do genuinely see hard court as like the equalizer around the world. I feel like it's the only court surface you genuinely could get in any country in the world, unlike, you know, maybe a grass court or clay, for example. But I still feel like, yeah, it's like an imperfect. It's still imperfect to me of thinking about it as a kind of a true or kind of purist kind of court, because there's just so many different variables at play, with regards to kind of the weather, even the tennis balls. It just feels like, yeah, there's too many factors at play that it's hard to standardize, I think, and collectivize every single hard court on the tour to kind of one common denominator. And I think that's what the tricky thing we are raising more and more at the moment. So for me, I would still say, yeah, growing up sentimentally, I do see hard court as like the equalizer or the kind of the purest sense, given its coverage around the world. But I acknowledge that it's almost imperfect because there are just too many variables at stake.
Yeah, interesting one. For me, I'm going to pose, before I go to you, Chris, grass courts, are they not maybe the truest surface just because they're the most historic and came about before the other surfaces? So would grass not actually be considered like the original surface? I guess it depends where you're kind of brought up and play tennis and all of that. But I would agree that maybe we should just not think about any sort of court as being like the default when they're all so different. But Chris, what do you think?
Well, I hate to I'm gone to the history books for this answer.
Not the rule books, at least.
I know, another book's in front of me. And interestingly, the original court would have probably have been stone, dating back to the 11th century, when monks used to play sort of a handball version of tennis.
You're stone court around the
I'm not, but that does feel particularly pure. And then it became real tennis, which was obviously on a hard court. So it wasn't actually until the 18th century that field tennis or grass court tennis was introduced. So the original tennis would have been on a hard court, wood or stone. I don't really think that we would like to mix it up with a wood or a stone court. But in terms of the tennis that we know today, field tennis, grass would have been the original. So I'll give you that one, Kim. But for me, I think the neutral court is hard courts. The purest court in my mind is a grass court, because it grows from the ground. You know, there's nothing done to it apart from you get your lawnmower out and make sure you've got it the right length.
Well, I'm sure there's a bit more to it. We had the Wimbledon groundsman on once, who I'm sure would disagree that it wasn't just a bit of a mow and
a bit of turf in case it goes wrong. You know, patch it up.
Chris, I've just thought if like as unlikely as it is, if stone does come back as a surface, there needs to be some sort of stone Stevens.
Stone Stevens.
That just has to happen. Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, it's got to happen. And can she be the only player that enters so that she can win it for me?
Yeah. Thank you, Si, for your question. That's a very interesting one. And do keep them coming. We'd love to hear everyone's thoughts and questions. So thank you very much.
Sabalenka, paving slab, could also be playing in that one.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, Slabalenka, keep them coming.
Stone Stevens versus Arena Slabalenka. Wow, love that. listeners, if you've got any more concrete stone puns of tennis players, share them. Share them our way on social.
Pave Gula.
Oh my God, Chris.
Pave Gula. I had to think who you meant for a minute. I was like,
that's a sign. It's not a good one, isn't it, Kim?
Oh, right. Where were we? Del Potro, he's coming out of retirement, apparently. You know, he used to like a hard court, won the US Open in 2009, retired earlier this year, last year? I think it was last year now. But he said that he's going to resume training.
Or did he?
Did he just evolve to another stage and now he's unevolving back to tennis? I don't know. But what do you think about this? Is this kind of... I know, Joel, you get a bit frustrated. You think players should just give up and not kind of keep trying to.
I don't want
come
to see
back
him back. I know I'm probably in the minority here. I don't want to see him back. I just think it'll just be sad. I think, it'll, emotionally, it sounds great. But to see him come back on and, you know, play someone that I would see, like, you know, prime Del Potro would just absolutely wipe the floor with, you know, at Flushing Meadows, and then, you know, lose like meekly, like 2-3 and 3 or something. I just don't feel like we see how hard it is to come back. It's just going to be, I just think it's going to be too tough for Del Potro. So I'm, you know, with his body as well, I'm just like, I just feel like just give it up. Just give it up. Sorry. Just give it up.
Yeah. I kind of agree. He had so many difficulties, and I think the reason players retire is because they kind of can't take it anymore. So, but maybe they just need a bit of time away. But I just feel like he went through so much. It's probably, I don't know. I mean, I wish him all the best of it, but I'm kind of in agreement, to be honest.
It's not going to be a comeback, though, is it? I think he kind of said that, you know, if he's able to pick up a racket, he would love to be able to do it. But it's not as easy as that. And I think we've seen that for players who have tried to come back without sort of the form initially, like Serena, when she started her most recent comeback. It did take a little while for her to kind of peak at the US Open. So I'm probably not an advocate of someone just picking up a racket and turning up at the US Open, because you have to play... You have to play yourself back into form. We've talked about the difficulties for players who have been playing much more recently and then get injured. I think his last match was in sort of February 2022 or something like that. It was a long time ago. And that was a pretty sort of run-of-the-mill loss. So I think it is sometimes it's obviously difficult to walk away from something, but he has had sort of a farewell in front of his home crowd. And I think potentially dragging it out might not be the most kind of... the most positive experience for fans or him alike.
We'll see how it goes. Some exciting news for British tennis fans, though. We've had the announcement that Manchester are going to be hosting, they're going to be one of the host cities for the 2023 Davis Cup in September from the 12th to the 17th, which is very exciting. We're going to be hosting Group B, where Australia, Great Britain, France and Switzerland will be competing. Bologna, Valencia and Croatia are also hosting, and the finals will be in Malaga in November. So quite exciting. The groups have been unveiled as well. We know that Spain and Serbia are in the same group in Valencia. I think it's quite unlikely, though, we're going to see a Rafa against Novak matchup, given that it's right after the US Open. There's been travel issues potentially for Canada, Team Canada. They're supposed to be in Bologna, but this comes right after the US Open and right before the Laver Cup in Vancouver, which starts right after. So if the likes of FAA and Denis Shapovalov want to be doing both events, potentially all three, depending on how they do at the US Open, might be a lot of back and forth travel. So we'll have to see how the scheduling works for that. But exciting that it's in Manchester. Chris and Joel, are you going to try and perhaps go up to Manchester and get a bit of Davis Cup action, perhaps?
Yeah. I was thinking Valencia could be nice, no?
Valencia, yeah. Or Malaga in November. That sounds quite nice to me.
To be honest, I was just actually thinking when you said Laver Cup, Denis Shapovalov, I think the sort of elephant in the room question is, I don't think Denis Shapovalov's form at the moment warrants Laver Cup. I think it, you know, would have last season, but it doesn't feel like at the moment it's really clicking for him.
That's another one, Denis Shapovalov. That could work. Anyway, this could get old very quickly. Let's have a look at the rest of Miami, because we do have the latter stages of the tournament. Chris, you predicted an Alcaraz and a Rybakina win. Joel, you predicted a Medvedev and Rybakina win. Do you both think those are still going to happen, given what we've seen so far?
I think that mine are going to happen, that's for sure.
I think, I don't think Medvedev's Zverev final was anywhere accurate. But I really do think we could get a repeat of the way the draw has gone. It just feels like it's falling into place for another Medvedev-Alcaraz rematch. I'm still going to go with Medvedev. Although I have been impressed with how well Alcaraz has been able to kind of sustain the level he is playing.
So aggressive,
and actually, I feel like he's actually gone up a gear in Miami. So I'm expecting to see a repeat of the final there, but I've still got Medvedev as champ.
Who did you have for this one, Kim?
I had Alcaraz, which I still agree with, and I had Sabalenka, but obviously I'm going to have to go for Rybakina, I think, now that Sabalenka's just lost today. I think Rusevori's just stepped on court. Can't see him wearing a watch, though. So
disappointing.
I don't know. Yeah, he doesn't know what time of day it is at the moment. But on that note, we'll be back next week, promptly, I hope. But we'll be back to round up what does happen in Miami.
Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from Miami and the ATP and WTA tours.
We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @TennisWeeklyPod. Or you can email us on TennisWeeklyPod@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out our website, www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next Monday at Tennis Weekly HQ for another episode looking back on the finals action to come at the Miami Open. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Kim.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.